Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. On today's show, I speak with actress Claire Rankine about season 3 of Son of a Critch. That's coming up on Endeavors. Hi there. Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to Endeavors. Welcome to 2024. It is hard to believe that we're already midway through the second decade. Actually, the third decade of the 21st century. I hope you all had a good holiday. I know I was away a little longer than I wanted to, but I do have some big news for those who are relatively consistent listeners but may not follow me on social media. If you're listening before the Christmas break, you knew that I was taking a teacher training course here in the UK in Newcastle to get what's called CELTA certified. CELTA is the is like a certificate for teaching English as a second language or foreign language, as is more commonly known here. But, you know, I was also struggling with, you know, where to live, where to work, a job, all that good stuff. I was in my friend's place in the UK. I was hostling it out for a while. I went over to Innsbruck for a moment. But I have landed somewhere. There is a school in Slovakia called CIDS, or CIDS, S-A-I-D-S, which they go around to various towns in Slovakia and in the Czech Republic. And they go into schools and teach English kind of 1 week at a time. So it's a really cool job that I think fits in well with sort of my transient nomadic lifestyle. I'll get to work. I'll get to travel within a certain country. You know, and I get accommodations paid for the weeks in which I'm working. Also really excited to try Slovakian food, you know, see the Slovakian Alps, get back up into Czech Republic a little bit. When I was backpacking last year, I only ever made it to Prague, and then I did Bratislava for a day when I was in Vienna, because you take the bus just across the border there, because Bratislava is like an hour away. It's the only capital city that borders two countries, Austria and Hungary. Just a fun fact. So I actually fly to Vienna on Saturday the 20th, and then we'll bus across to Bratislava, and then my journey begins in a town called Levice, which is just about an hour south of Bratislava, closer to the border with, near the border with Hungary there, in sort of western Slovakia. So I've been really kind of, not scrambling the last couple weeks, but, you know, focused, I should say, on getting that part of my life organized and, looking at flights and this and that. But, I think things are coming together. I go to London really early on Wednesday morning. I have dinner with a friend on Thursday, do some final things on Friday, fly on Saturday. I'll get to see kind of Bratislava at night, which will be fun. And can practice my German a little bit more. In Vienna, I guess I'll have to learn Slovakian now, or Slovak, which is a language I couldn't find on Duolingo. So that's going to be an interesting challenge to navigate. But that's what life is all about, isn't it? All of this rant or monologue is to say that this contract will take me into the beginning of April, second, like April 7th, I think, just based on, how long I can. Yeah, I think that's right. Because that's like their, they have initial like 3 month trial period, and then I can go and maybe work at like a summer camp or somewhere else, and then come back, on like a full, full like year-long contract or however they decide to do it. So I am still going to try my very best to podcast regularly. I'll try to do interviews on sort of nights and weekends. I know scheduling will be a little bit difficult because I'll be, anywhere from 6 to 9 hours ahead if I'm interviewing somebody in North America, only an hour ahead if I'm interviewing somebody in the UK. So it's going to be a bit of a, just challenge to schedule and get them up regularly. But I will do my best. And I know, even the last couple years, this show hasn't been as regular as I, perhaps would have liked it to have been. But we are getting back to the things that matter here. So that was just the update I wanted to make. So that'll take me to April, and then hopefully by the time that job ends, I'll have something else lined up here in the UK, or maybe I'll go back to Canada for a month or so. Anyway, but speaking of Canada, I was fortunate enough to speak with one of the stars of probably Canada's biggest show and funniest export at the moment, Son of a Critch, which has just begun airing its third season. It is created by Mark Critch, who you may know from This Hour Has 22 Minutes. He created it about his childhood growing up in Newfoundland, which, has its own sense of humor, especially within the the confines of Canadian economy. It also stars Malcolm McDowell, who is funny as hell in it, and Claire Rankine, who plays the character of Mark's mother, childhood young Mark's mother. In the show, and she just talks about, what it was like being on the show working with Malcolm McDowell, and she's from PEI, and sort of about how Atlantic Canada has its own sense of humor and is finally maybe getting known and recognized a little bit more within Canada, and also what it means to have a network like the CW now behind Son of a Critch, and now it's getting some airplay in the States and here in the UK. So, this is my conversation with Claire Rankine.
Hi,
Technology,
How's
right?
it going?
Good.
What's that now?
I said technology, right? You never know what it's going
Oh,
to do.
God. I'm telling you. Like, since we like moved to like Zoom, I'm like, please don't make me do another audition on Zoom. It's always a nightmare.
Yep. This is, as a digital nomad, Zoom is my life. So,
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Son of a Critch.
Sure, let's do it.
You're now in season three. I believe it just premiered last week.
Last night.
Last night, wow.
Last night, yeah. First episode last night in Canada, anyway.
What first grabbed your attention about the role of Mary?
Oh, God, she was incredible. I was sent three or four scenes, a couple of great monologues that were just this rapid fire, fantastic, you know, rat-a-tat kind of dialogue that was amazing. And she reminded me of both of my grandmothers, really, kind of rolled together. I'm from Prince Edward Island. So, you know, it's not that far away from Newfoundland culture, really. It's pretty close. And so, yeah, between the amazing writing and the dialogue, which was incredible, and the idea that she felt kind of close to home, and very rarely do I ever play anything that's close to home. So, yeah, she was exciting.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Marcus from Newfoundland, and that's where the show takes place. And I think that's one kind of part of Canada that we're starting to see more stories come out of recently. Is there a specific sort of type of humor that you think is really prevalent in Atlantic or maritime storytelling?
Oh, well, I would say definitely like Newfoundland really has its own. It's different than anywhere else in the country. It really is. I mean, there's definitely an East Coast vibe for like Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, all of that. But when I think of Newfoundland, you think of all the comedians that have come over there. I think it's the isolation, right? Like on the rock in the winter. It's the musicians, the actors, the comedians, like the people that come out of there. I was at the Duke of Duckworth one night, and it was amazing the people that were there, right? And one all talking to each other. It was Alan Doyle, Tom Power, you know, Mark Critch. And then there's other credible musicians around. There's Perry Chafe, who's like written the novel. And, you know, and I thought, oh my God, it's this whole generation of people who know each other. And then you go up one and you're like Rick Mercer. It's, you know, it's just, I honestly really think it's a cultural thing of really only having each other and being able to satirize all of it, you know?
And how does it feel to have your father-in-law played by Malcolm McDowell?
Oh God, that's incredible. Yeah, he's incredible. I was terrified when I first arrived. I didn't know he was doing the show. And I opened my cast list and there was Malcolm's picture. And I thought, oh my God, what's that gonna be like, you know? Because he's so terrifying in so many films and things where he just is, and he's the biggest teddy bear. He's so kind, so generous. Some of my favorite scenes are with Malcolm. He and I get to do a lot of schemes together. And he's like, just a very generous actor. He's so supportive to all of us. He loves being there. He's great with the kids. And he tells the best stories.
I mean, you're obviously the wife of Mark's character, who it's about his life and he created it. What's that like as an actor, knowing that you are playing opposite the writer and, you know, you're telling his story, but here you are standing in the room with him?
Yeah, there's a lot of layers. There's a lot of layers there, right? So Mark is playing his own father, then he's watching himself as a child growing up, then he's watching me as his mother, but I'm also playing his wife. So, you know, there's a lot of layers going on there. You're like, we all need a little therapy. But I think what's incredible is that Mark has given me so much freedom in the role. I think he said now too, it's like, you know, the roles now season to season, he's like, when I'm writing, I'm thinking, you know, yes, these are the stories that happened to me in my life, but I'm thinking about, you know, how Claire would do it or how Benjamin is doing it and what's coming from that now. So it's, yeah, I never got to meet Mary. She died in 2017, I believe. And so I know a lot of stories, but I feel like it's like, I do ask Mark, like, am, you know, does this seem right? Does that seem right? More so in the first season. And now we've kind of all felt this place where we're doing the essence of someone and telling their stories, but also bringing ourselves to it now.
What do you think fans are going to be excited about the most of about season three?
I think season three is really a year about endings and new beginnings. It's grade nine for Mark. So it's his last year in junior high school. Next year, he'll be going to high school. So he's kind of in the top dog, you know, place at school. So it's a very different feeling of where he was in seventh grade. And there's a lot of changes for all of family members, I think. Like, they're, well, for the kids, obviously going from grade nine into grade 10. So that year, and my junior is, you know, starting to get on his own feet and find his way out in the world with a job and all of those kinds of things. So we're seeing him as a young man find his way. And then I think that's really hard on Mike and Mary as well, because they're now dealing with a bit of emptiness syndrome and the idea that maybe they're not needed so much anymore. So I think it's interesting to see, like, what's their relationship like with each other if there's not going to be any kids in the house at a certain point. And, you know, Pop is realizing how much older Mark is, and, you know, what's that relationship like? He was a little kid, he needed his advice, they shared a room. Well, where are they at now that he's going to be 14, 15 years old, right? He's a real teenager. So it's there's a lot of change happening in season three, I think.
You know, speaking of changes, I'm curious, how much has the actor relationship changed and evolved between yourself and somebody like Benjamin and Colton? Because they're obviously, you know, they were like, I think he was like 11, 12 when he started, and now he's 15, 16. How has that evolved, yeah, and how has that relationship sort of changed as the show's progressed?
Well, I think what's interesting is that we all are out there for about 3 months together from all over the country and different countries. And so there's a little bit of a summer camp feel to it, really, because we've all kind of left our homes and have made that our home for the summer and a bit of the fall. And it creates a different kind of bond. So I think it is interesting. And Benjamin really did feel like a little boy, you know, when we started the show. He was a little boy. He came up to, you know, halfway at my chest. And, you know, now he's about 5 foot, I don't know, 10, you know, I'm looking up at him now, kind of thing in the show. And his voice has dropped, and, you know, the changes are happening. And so it's interesting to see what he's gone through. But we've all just become closer and closer. I think the amazing thing is, you know, and I mean, actors tell you this kind of stuff all the time, like, well, we're such a family, we all love each other. But, you know, it is a very interesting set that way. I mean, I've had very few jobs in my life where I really would count all the people I work with as friends. You know, my dad came to visit and he just was like, I can't believe the group of people that you get to work with. I'm like, I know, I get to go to work every day with people that really, truly are my friends. Malcolm calls all the time, you know, from wherever he is, Mexico, London, I don't know what, you know. Colton is in Toronto here and there. And, you know, we socialize, you know, Benjamin was just back in town to do some press, and we all hung out and, you know, invite anytime to come to the UK. So it's, we really do stay in touch all through the year as well. It's sad, you know, it sounds very sappy, but we kind of really are family.
And what I heard about interesting about this season is that it's now being co-produced, I think, by the CW in the US, yeah, which is very rare for a Canadian show. I mean, I think the success of Anne with an E and Schitt's Creek kind of helped pave the way for Canadian comedies. But what does that mean to you in this show to have this big American company now behind it?
It's really exciting. It's really, really exciting. You know, I lived in Los Angeles for a lot of years. And so the CW, you know, originally was like the WB. And, but, you know, there's all these great shows that came out of it, Dawson's Creek and like all, you know. And so it has this kind of, I don't know, there's a little bit of mystique in it where you're like, oh, it's so great. Like this really cool, tiny, wonderful, regional little comedy that we're making has actually grabbed the attention, you know, of a big market. And they have shown like a lot of interest and support, which is fantastic down there. You know, I think it's a very universal show in a certain way. We all have growing pains and all those kinds of things. But I think we are getting more and more interested in shows that are specific regionally and stuff too, that really do show us a certain lifestyle, a certain culture, a certain place. So I really hope that, you know, we're doing really well. They're airing season three at the end of this month, I think the 25th of January. And, you know, we were the number one comedy on the network for the last little while. So, you know, we're hoping they'll stay on board and we'll get to do season four.
And in my neck of the woods, in Britain, I know it's being aired on Paramount Plus. And it feels like, especially with comedy, there's a lot of similarities, I think, between the Canadian sense of humor and the British sense of humor.
Absolutely.
Have you heard from any British fans at all about how it's doing over here and how they relate to it?
I think you're absolutely correct. Like it is, there is a very similar sensibility. You know, we had an Irish casting director on the show as well, because they were, and you know, we've used some UK actors and brought them over because it's a perfect fit, right? But like, there's an interesting story that Mark had just told us recently. But he met a guy in Newfoundland in the Duke of Duckworth, and he was Pakistani descent, but had been living in Switzerland. And he was working in Geneva for the UN or something and was watching the show on Paramount Plus and found Newfoundland so fascinating and so interesting. He started doing some research on Newfoundland and then he went job searching and actually found a job in Newfoundland, which I just thought was amazing. Like, I'm like, he picked up his life and moved to Newfoundland from the show. Which is really wild, but I do think that, you know, clearly it's reaching some people in bigger ways than others.
If you had to sort of distill the, I think the Canadian sense of humor, what do you think that is? What is the secret ingredient?
Oh, maybe satire and self-deprecation, probably. You know, which is a very British as well, right? You know, we love the underdog. I think we're very much that we love the underdogs, you know, and the triumph of that. I think we're not afraid to make fun of ourselves. You know, growing up, you know, next door to the United States, we're always like, you know, the younger sibling sort of thing. And I think that there's it's an it, we've always been good to take the piss out of ourselves sort of thing. You know, it's like we're not afraid to like actually, you know, make a little fun of us. And I think there's something very relatable to that, right? Who doesn't like to see the underdog succeed?
I mean, your show's doing very well. We mentioned Schitt's Creek. We've had other Canadian success stories, and yet the industry always seems to be slightly in a slightly precarious state. Compared to, compared to the US or other industries, especially television. What do you make of the state of the Canadian industry at the moment?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I do think that there's some new shows coming out on CBC. They're really regionally specific, and I think they're doing a really great job of trying to really show us all the different aspects of the country. I feel like it might be the only place that has a mandate to make sure that we do that. And so, you know, we get to see something that's like, you know, Heartland, you know, that's like showing us what it's like to live on the prairies. And then we've got us like in Newfoundland. And so, you know, and there's a new show that's coming that'll be, you know, set up north. And I think it's, I think that's really important. I think fear is being gobbled up by the US beside us, right? And, you know, if I think the more shows that we can do that are culturally significant to us, you know, I don't know if we need another generic doctor show or lawyer show, you know, things that the US already does really, really well. But I think the shows that are beautiful here, like Sort Of, you know, which is another great show on the CBC that, you know, really showed like what a downtown Toronto, like urban community is, you know, and it's really specific to Canadian culture. Who are we? And so I feel like the more we see of that, the stronger I think the industry in general will be. It's the same thing with our Canadian music. We have, you know, amazing Canadian musicians, you know, and they really often have a very regional sense of place. And it's exciting.
Well, you know, speaking of music, a lot of the great Canadian musicians come from the East Coast, come from the Maritimes.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Alan Doyle. There's the Rankin family, the Barry McNeils, you know,
yeah.
And it's a lot of sort of steeped in sort of folk Celtic tradition. And it strikes me that there's something about that part of the country that has a really keen sense of storytelling. You know, being from PEI and working on the show, have you thought about what makes the Maritimes uniquely suited to a storytelling culture?
What a great question. Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of that Irish and Scottish heritage out there, right? With so much music that are these entire like storytelling ballads, and you know, so much of history was told through those songs. And I think it is that they are cultures that are a lot of, you know, sharing stories down generation to generation and keeping that alive, you know. There's a so I do think, and there is an isolation to it, right? There's the kind of work that there is out there, right? It's hard work being fishermen, farming. These are like the kind of jobs that have a lot of, you know, you're very isolated, and I think that brings, like, you know, you only have your community. You know, they say there's so many accents in Newfoundland. There's so many different accents all over the island because it's inaccessible through the center and through a lot of it. And so there's tons of people when they came, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, landed in this settlement, and that accent stayed only there basically in the entire province because you really weren't moving around. So I think to keep those stories alive and to like keep that culture alive, we keep, you know, there is a lot of generational storytelling there.
What are some misconceptions that people have about Maritimers? Because, you know, you mentioned taking the piss out earlier, and I think a lot of Canadian, you know, West Coasters or Torontonians like to do that to the folks on the East.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I really do. The stereotype that, you know, a Newfoundlander will take the shirt off his back to give it to you is absolutely correct. Like, I, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, well, PEI, we're like the second nicest, are we, maybe? Like, you know, and the CPEI, Nova Scotia, kind of, you know, but like Newfoundland really does take the cake, I have to say. Like, you know, they are extraordinary. I mean, obviously, you know, we got come from away out of it, and, you know, the stories of like what people gave during that time. So I do think that's a very interesting thing, but I do, you know, it is a very, you know, historically a very rural, you know, fishing and farming kind of place. So I'm sure the big cities, you know, with their urban centers, you know, but now it's, you know, Halifax is its own urban center. St. John has massive industry. So, you know, there's things happening in Charlottetown. We all have the internet, like, you know, so I think that, you know, whatever that gap was closed a long time ago.
And of course, a big part of that part of the country is food. If you had to recommend one sort of PEI specialty, culinary specialty to people, what would it be?
Oh, I mean, look, I grew up in a family of lobster fishermen and stuff like that. So I love lobster so much. When we're known for our mussels, PEI mussels are amazing, and we're known for our oysters and our malpecs. So, it's all seafood, seafood, seafood. But we are also known for the humble potato. I mean, it is potato central in Prince Edward Island as well. So, potato salad. A really lovely potato salad, a cold potato salad, and then just lobster straight out of the pot.
Ooh.
Just, cooled down enough to eat it. That's straight out of the straight. No, nothing fancy. Just crack it open and have it.
Hey, I'm from an island too, so I love seafood. So I'm
Oh,
there.
it's everything.
Yeah. I imagine when filming a comedy or sitcom, there's a lot of sort of fun things that happen on set. Is there one memory from shooting this season that sticks out for you?
Good question. What I mean, there's always bits and pieces of craziness happening on set, and the boys are constantly, playing semi pranks on each other and stuff. Benjamin likes to get like really bags of incredibly sour candy and then tempt us all to eat it so that our faces are basically like, coming off. But I think what's great, I think there's more of these moments of like getting at the soccer ball and like, watching the kids kicking around and, Malcolm like teasing everybody and, pretending to be so barky and hilarious. And then, darling, darling, I'm just joking. It's more of that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of storytelling. Mark tells a great story. Malcolm tells a great story. We've heard really funny bits and pieces about all these kinds of adventures they had over the years. And so we kind of listen, intently and in rapture. So it's more of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Any news on if you have a season 4 yet? Do we know?
We don't know. We're very hopeful. All signs point towards go. So, but I don't think they'll make that official, ooh, quite yet. Usually it's pretty soon. We should know in the next, I'd say in the month or so, somewhere in the next little while. Yeah. But yes, very hopeful.
Now, of course, being an actress, you don't just do one thing. I know I'm looking at your credits here, and I know you have one project coming up, and I just wanted to ask if you can tell us anything about Sweet Summer Love.
Oh, right. I was like, what do I have just coming up? That's right. It's finished, but it's not out yet. It's one of those sweet romantic comedies where I actually am playing something very different than what I'm doing on Critch, so it was a lot of fun. Small cast, it's about a candy competition. So hopefully it'll be coming out. I would say in the spring it'll hit. Yeah, it'll hit. I'm not exactly sure where yet, so I can't say, but yeah, so that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And I know you also got to work with, I mean, this is going back a few years, but you got to work with Aaron Sorkin
Oh, I sure did.
on Molly's Game.
Yeah.
What is this? I mean, he is the master of dialogue. What is the Sorkin experience like, if I may ask?
It was incredible. It really was. It was from the audition where I went into the room and I thought, oh my God, that's Aaron Sorkin. Like I'm standing in front of Aaron Sorkin. I thought, and the audition went so well. And I left. I remember calling my agent and saying, I have no idea that it went really well. I have no idea if I'll get this job, but I can tell you right now, like basically Aaron Sorkin says I'm a good actor and I can live on that for like a year. Like I'll just put that in the back of me anytime. I'll be like, wow, Aaron Sorkin thought I was a good actor. And yeah, and then I got on set and I was playing Kevin Costner's wife, and he was absolutely generous, kind, extraordinary, like just just the everything you would ever want a movie star to be, you know? And what I found was so great about that experience was it really was a set, like it's a company of equals when you're doing your work, you know, you're surrounded by Aaron Sorkin and, you know, Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba. And like, it's just madness, you know, you're like, I'm doing a scene with Kevin Costner. This is nuts. But when you're doing the work, you're doing the work. Everybody's just an actor, you know, and everybody's just in that moment. And it was really a glorious experience, you know. And most of my stuff ended up on the cutting room floor, I think. But, you know, but the experience itself was, yeah, one to be treasured for sure.
Is there a different mindset going into something like that? I mean, it's a film versus a show, but it's, you know, it's more Hollywood, you know, it's, but the budgets are bigger. There's just more people around. Does your preparation change at all?
No, the preparation I don't think actually ever changes. I think that for me personally, it's always kind of about figuring out what the dynamic is on set. And with Molly's Game, I was lucky to start shooting at the very beginning. I shot like pre-shot before the actual even official first day. So I was in the very first shot of the very first movie that Kevin Costner that Aaron Sorkin had ever directed. And so it was the first day, it was the first for a lot of people in that kind of way. It was really cool. And it is about like really gauging, you know, what is the dynamic on this set. That one was incredibly inclusive. It comes from the top down. And, you know, they really, you know, Aaron and Kevin, where they were amazing. And so the whole dynamic, whole feeling on set is that way, which is what it's like on Critch, where it comes because it comes from Mark, you know, and at the very top of everything. But yeah, every set you land on, you know, sometimes you land, you know, five seasons into a show and you're coming on as a guest star. And so, you know, you're just checking out the dynamic of the set, you know. Is this a very serious set? Is it a very quiet set? Is it a word perfect set? You know, there are sets where your script arrives and it says, this is a word perfect show, you know, do not change it at then anything. Right. So you're like, okay, when I arrive, it is word perfect. You know, there's movie stars that are, you know, more open and friendly. And there are some that are, you know, busy staying in character and doing their thing. So yeah, it's always kind of really feeling with the dynamic of a set actually is, and then figuring out where you fit in that and how can you do your work the way you'd like to in that dynamic.
What is one role or one type of character that you haven't played yet that you would like to explore?
God, that's really hard to know. I mean, I feel like I've played such a weird range of things, you know. I've played a really, you know, institutionalized girl who, you know, I played a lawyer. I played, you know, a woman with early onset Alzheimer's. I played a space alien, you know. I played, there is all like, so I think it's really as each project comes up, you know, what is it about that character that makes it interesting. I think not so much of like, oh, I'd like to play more villains, or I'd like to play, you know, more power, you know, CEOs or whatever. It's really about what is that character going through? What is their journey? And how exciting is that for me to try and portray, I think.
Is there a secret ingredient when you read a script that goes, yes?
Oh, well, I mean, it's always the writing. I really think we forget, like, when the writers went on strike, there was, you know, it was like, we needed to be supporting the writers. Like, there is nothing without a good story, right? There's nothing without a good story. It's, you can't save something that's not, you know, well-written. You know, even a bad actor can kind of work their way. It was so funny. Malcolm always says, like, we really should have awards for like bad things, you know, because it was a great script and a great director and great actors. Like it's easy to get good work, but you know, with a bad script, a good actor is trying really hard to like make something better than what's actually on the page. So It really is getting to when you actually read something where you think this dialogue it rings true. I believe these people, you know, the story has something to say. It makes me feel something when it's when I, you know, finish the last page. That's hard to come by. It's really hard to come by. And so getting back to Son of a Crit, it's just like I feel like I get all of those things, you know, and I get it on a script to script basis too. You know, I'm lucky to like do 13 of them each season. And so I'm always excited to read the next one because I know, you know, I'm going to feel so many things all the way through it.
Well, I definitely think the audience feels the same way, and you know, I think a lot of Canadians are just glad that our shows and our sensibilities are finally you know, reaching a wider audience, and we're not necessarily the younger brother or the younger cousin any, or the younger cousin anymore. Son of a Critch airs, is it Tuesday nights on
He
CBC
is on CBC.
and CBC Gem as well, right?
It's CBC Gem, yep,
Yeah.
exactly. So everything's out on CBC Gem as it is aired.
Well, we look forward to the funniness that season three has in store.
Excellent.
And here's hoping that we get a season four as well.
Yes, please. Thank you very much. Oh, I'll be saying my prayers for that too.
Claire Rankin, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it.
No worries. You have a good day.
Awesome, you too. Take care.
All righty. Cheers. Bye-bye.
And once again, that was my interview with Claire Rankin. Season 3 of Son of a Critch airs on Tuesday night on CBC and CBC Gem. In the US, Season 3 will premiere on the CW on January 25th. And in the UK and British Isles, it is streaming on Paramount Plus. Please check listings for exact times on that. My thanks to Claire Rankin. I hope you all have a very good week. That is it for me this show. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.